Barack Obama's autobiography, Dreams of My Father, obviously focuses on his relationship with his father, but Obama's mother has remained in the shadows to some extent. Ann Dunham was not a constant presence in young Barack's life, and perhaps their relationship was not all it could have been. It was a complicated one, certainly. Jenny Scott is the author of A Singular Woman, The Untold Story of Barack Obama's Mother. She has researched Ann Dunham's life and her impact on President Obama. She's going to be giving a talk tonight at 7 at the Louisville Free Public Library, but she has stopped by to give us a preview. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Todd.
Why do we know so little about Ann Dunham?
Well, I think it's you could say that we don't know a lot about the mothers of a lot of, for example, presidential candidates or senators and even presidents. So there's not naturally an impulse to look at this person. But what I found, I was working as a New York Times reporter during the campaign and writing about the then Senator Obama, I found that his mother's story was really quite startlingly surprising and unconventional. So that leads to another interpretation, which is, she lived a very complicated life, and it's hard to summarize it briefly and simplify it in a way that perhaps would be palatable to the American voter. So I think there's, on the one hand, we generally don't know about the mothers of a lot of politicians, but secondly, her life was far more complex and in many ways potentially polarizing in the view of the average American, and therefore perhaps we didn't hear about it for that reason.
It was easier to present her as a white woman from Kansas who married a black man and to create that kind of narrative rather than to go into the details.
Yeah. From the very beginning of hearing the life story of Barack Obama, she was simply the white woman from Kansas. Then during the campaign, she was the single mother on food stamps, or she was in his memoir, she's the idealistic woman who goes abroad to Indonesia or who is swept away by the African student at the University of Hawaii. All of these, there's some truth to them, but really they obscure a much more surprising and unorthodox American story of a woman who, as you point out, you know, married an African at age 18 at a time when nearly two dozen states had laws against interracial marriage, took her son, a young son, abroad to Indonesia, a country that few Americans understand, in a period of enormous political and social upheaval when she was merely in her early 20s, later raised two children as a single parent, two biracial children with different fathers as a single parent, homeschooled her daughter till about the age of 12, became something of a pioneer in fields like microfinance and international development that have been dominated by men. So this is a person who over and over again kind of broke the rules, even the rules from now, not just the rules back then.
And what kind of a person would this be, this person who broke all these rules?
Well, if you look at her history, she was technically born in Kansas. She didn't spend much time there. She grew up in constant motion. Her father was an unsuccessful furniture salesman. They moved around. By the time she was 13, she'd moved six or seven times. So she had developed early on a kind of outsider's perspective on the world from landing in these places and having to adapt but never fully adapt. So she developed this sort of insider, outsider, observer position that in many ways is the view of an anthropologist, the line of work she ultimately went into. She was extraordinarily open, I would say, intellectually and emotionally. And I think that underlies a lot of the decisions in her life. Her willingness to fall for the first African student at the University of Hawaii in 1960, her willingness then to go off to Indonesia with an Indonesian, her second husband, an Indonesian, her openness to the world of Indonesia, which became a great fascination for her and the basis of her career. She ended up spending more than half of her life there. So I think there's, from the very beginning, a lack of need to really conform, which I think came from this constant motion, but also an extraordinary openness, which was probably something even going back in her family that you could see.
There's plenty of discussion that's taken place around her decision to send Barack Obama away to school in Hawaii, and he went and lived with his grandmother there. But based on what you just said, it reminded me that there's another way to look at it. In her openness to Indonesian society, she made the decision for at least, the first few years of his schooling to put him in Indonesian school, to give him that kind of cultural experience.
Yeah, she wanted both of her children to have a kind of global citizen upbringing, to grow up with a comfort with things that many Americans find foreign and different. And she did that very successfully. But she also cared deeply about education. She came from a family of school teachers and educators going back many generations in Kansas and back in the Oklahoma Territory. And so when the young Barack was 10 or almost 10, and he had there was no good English language education available to them in Indonesia at that time, she made what many Americans consider oddly a selfish decision to stay there and send him back to Hawaii to be educated in a very good school and to live with his grandparents. But I think she viewed it almost as a selfless decision, that she was giving up her opportunity as a mother to be close to this child who there is no disputing she absolutely adored and admired in order for him to get the thing that she thought would serve him best in life. She did then return to Hawaii to spend most of middle school with him, but then again, when he was entering high school, she went back to Indonesia to finish her PhD dissertation in order to be able to work to support her children, which she was on her own at that point. So it's a complex decision involving the juggling of a number of facts. She was married to an Indonesian at that point. She had a half Indonesian child. She wasn't free to just move back to Hawaii with him permanently for his, the purpose of his education, or at least wasn't free to do so if she wanted to continue to have that marriage or the line of work she'd chosen.
From what you've been able to discover about her, what was the impact on her relationship with her son as a result of that? It was, I think you can look at it as a selfless decision, but the impact is long-lasting.
Absolutely. I think it's very difficult as an outsider to really assess the full breadth of that impact. There's no question that he feels that he grew up, he said this when I interviewed him last summer, with, again, the phrase that I used about her, but a constant motion in his childhood. And that he made a choice to do the opposite with his own children and with his own marriage, which I think is very telling. He said that while he got his values and his desire to go into public service from his mother, he made a very conscious choice to root himself in Chicago, marry a woman from Chicago, and raise his children with a kind of stability that he never had. So I think he must have profoundly ambivalent feelings about this. While he admires his mother and feels he owes her an enormous debt, I think he also, it's clear to me from that statement, feels that it was a hard thing for him to go through. He said that as a 10-year-old boy, you don't fully appreciate how difficult it is. But looking back as a parent, he sees how tough that would have been on him.
And this relationship then was under a kind of strain for a while.
Yeah. One of the interesting things I found was that people who were close to her, and she was quite a private woman, but she did occasionally confide very personal things to people, told me a number of stories that suggested that she was very conscious of a distance between them. And I'm sure in light of the decisions she'd made, she must have wondered how much that distance came from those choices. There was even his decision ultimately to self-identify as African-American and to, when he started to get interested in politics in Chicago, to kind of immerse himself in that world. One close friend of hers said she didn't think of it as a rejection, but a kind of distancing, and that it was she felt kind of wistful about it. It's clear that she wanted more contact with him as an adult, and God knows many parents probably do want that with their adult children. It's apparent from a few stories that people told me that she was occasionally stung or at least wistful, I suppose, about how it all turned out.
And he could have very easily written an autobiography that focused on what he learned from his mother. But that was, I suppose, a part of that decision that he made to identify as an African-American, perhaps.
Yes, I think in a way that decision is made for you in this country. You know, that book arose out of a moment when he had been elected the first black president of the Harvard Law Review. And he was approached by a literary agent who said, in the wake of a number of major newspaper articles about him at that time, you know, you could write a good memoir. So it was a memoir that came out of a moment where he was being hailed as the first black in this particular role. So it's natural that, in a way, the memoir would focus on his coming to terms with his racial identity as African-American. So I don't know that you can say that it's a clear rejection, but it's interesting to think how she felt it.
Jenny Scott, journalist and author, and her book is A Singular Woman, The Untold Story of Barack Obama's Mother. She will be giving a talk tonight at 7 at Louisville Free Public Library, lfpl.org, if you want to look that up, and make sure you get there early. It may be standing room only. Thank you very much for coming in and talking.
Thank you, Todd.